morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, June 25th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Bark and other LNG opponents are pushing the Portland City Council to pass a resolution against liquefied natural gas in Oregon.
The LNG fast-track bill made in corporate heaven sits in legislative limbo. Next stop.
And PGE may have to spend millions of dollars more than planned to clean up pollution at Boardman.
Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy, high near 68. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 52. And tomorrow, fabulous, mostly sunny and high around 74.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. A coalition of conservation groups led largely by Columbia Riverkeeper has been working for months to persuade our state legislature not to fast-track permit for LNG terminals and pipelines by passing bill House Bill 3058. Yesterday, an article appeared in the Forest Grove News Times which described the bill as stalled. Now is not the time, of course, to let up. With me this morning to keep listeners up to date on House Bill 3058, which is, of course, the fast track for LNG legislation, is Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Chris.
So, Dan, where do we stand right now? House Bill 3058, just remind listeners, if you would, what that is.
Sure. House Bill 3058 is a bill that will allow LNG companies to go and obtain permits for crossing people's property without the property owner's permission. So they could get a permit to cross a wetland or a stream on a farm or a forest they don't own and move forward with their project. We think this is a terrible idea for obvious reasons. First of all, the bill tips the balance against private landowners who are already facing a very skewed federal process. So we think it's going to create a ton of problems and a new fiasco in the state of Oregon surrounding LNG. And so we really urge legislators not to use this approach for LNG siting.
Now, when they talk about this bill being stalled, what does that actually mean? Is this good news or bad news? How should we understand that?
We are cautiously optimistic that this bill will not get out of the Senate. We think it's a waste of time for the legislature to be essentially considering a bill that's just a handout to the LNG industry. So the bill right now has not been scheduled for a hearing. It's still with the Senate Rules Committee. It was passed by the House, and apparently the Senate is taking a more cool view of this approach to siting LNG pipelines.
How can we? How can listeners keep the pressure on to avoid having any further business to do with fast-tracking LNG and just put a stop to the whole idea?
Well, we're still encouraging people to call their senators and urge them to not vote for this bill if it comes to a full Senate vote. So if you're out there wondering about who to call, you can go online, you can find out who your legislator is, tell them you're a constituent, and tell them to oppose House Bill 3058.
Dan, thank you so much for that, and we'd like to have you back again in the near future to keep us informed and up to date on the whole LNG process. Thank you very much for that. My guest this morning has been Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper.
The answers to all your sustainability questions will be answered this afternoon. The Portland Development Commission and the Oregon Sustainability Center are presenting plans for a high-rise office building near Portland State. The idea is to showcase the region's expertise in developing and designing earth-friendly buildings. This is the centerpiece of the Cascadia Region Green Building Council's Living Building Challenge. The challenge is net zero energy consumption and no carbon footprint.
It's interesting, isn't it, that whenever green means a new company, we'll all go ahead with it. But if it's something like Columbia Crossing or LNG, or any one of a number of other things, then the idea of not doing something isn't on the table. We're not that green yet. The City of Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is holding a series of meetings in the next week on their draft climate action plan. Lately, Burke and other LNG opponents have been pushing the Portland City Council to pass a resolution against liquefied natural gas in Oregon. My guest today is Olivia Schmidt with the Oregon Sierra Club and, of course, again, Columbia Riverkeeper. Welcome back to KBOO, Olivia. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris.
Can you talk about this resolution and what impact it's going to have?
Absolutely. For the past 2 years throughout the state of Oregon, cities and counties have been passing resolutions in opposition to liquefied natural gas development and related pipelines in an effort to protect the residents of their communities, in an effort to address climate change, and in an effort to continue the push toward energy independence and not weaken our energy independence by investing in these foreign fossil fuels. This evening at 6:30 p.m. at the Dishman Community Center, which is at 77 Northeast Knott Street, the City of Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is holding the beginning of a series of meetings about their draft climate action plan. This idea of passing an action plan that would attempt to reduce or set goals to reduce carbon emissions in the City of Portland is a really great idea. And what we want is for people to go there and say, we want you to pass an action plan, but let's not do that and be completely ignorant of the fact that the liquefied natural gas proposals are intended to, in some part, serve the Portland public with extremely high carbon impact gas from foreign countries. So we're hoping that folks will go out tonight and attend this hearing and let people know on that committee that, you know, we support a climate action plan, but as a part of that action plan, they should be passing a resolution to oppose liquefied natural gas. If the City of Portland passes a resolution opposing LNG in Oregon, it will send a huge message not only to the LNG companies but to the general public of Oregon that no one in the state is looking forward to this development going through.
It seems absurd to be talking about our carbon footprint and in the next breath even suggesting that LNG terminals and pipelines are a good thing for Oregon. Is there anything you'd like to just say in conclusion, Olivia?
I'd just like to say, you know, the anti-LNG movement is strong. We have a contingent in Portland that meets at the Oregon Sierra Club office the second Thursday of every month at 6 o'clock. I encourage people to contact me at oliviariver@gmail.com if you're interested in participating, and look into organizations that are fighting these projects like the Oregon Sierra Club, Columbia River Keeper, and BARC, to name a few.
Thank you so much for that. My guest this morning has been Olivia Schmidt with the Oregon Sierra Club and Columbia River Keeper. Thanks so much, Olivia.
Thank you, Chris.
Last night, the Oregon Senate backed up Governor Kulongoski's plan to cut greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks by forcing oil companies to reduce carbon in gasoline and diesel fuel. The measure gives state environmental regulators the authority to require petroleum companies to reduce the carbon content of fuel sold for cars and trucks in Oregon by 10%, by the year 2020. Here's the catch. It would be up to the oil companies to decide how they do it, whether by introducing biofuels or using alternative energies to produce the fuels.
Oregon is not off the hook when it comes to coal emissions either. PGE may have to spend millions of dollars more than planned to clean up pollution at its Boardman coal-fired plant. The Oregon Environmental Quality Commission has approved tougher rules, and a decision last week ended a multi-year process to meet federal requirements to reduce haze pollution in scenic and wildlife areas. Combined with plans to reduce mercury emissions, the pollution controls will increase rates from 3% to 4%. But why should ratepayers shoulder the costs of PGE's bad judgments?
So what is it about coal that we don't understand? In Washington state, environmental groups are asking the Department of Interior to certify that pollution from a coal-fired plant in Centralia is causing haze and poor visibility in Mount Rainier and Olympic National Parks. A National Park Service official, Don Shepard, says emissions from TransAlta's power plant is a significant contributor to the visual impairment of national parks in the state.
Has anyone else noticed that Oregon is only green when there's money to be made on it? Here's what I mean. We're still considering these LNG terminals and pipeline. We've turned a blind eye to massive clear cutting. We've got this Columbia Crossing, but now the Oregon House has approved a bill to promote the generation of solar power in Oregon. Why? Because solar power is big business, and that makes all the difference in the world. Anyway, House Bill 3039 creates two programs. One of them is a pilot program to study a feed-in tariff for projects under 500 kilowatts. a feed-in tariff is going to be a word that you a term that you hear more and more frequently as this debate goes forward.
There's no such thing as a free lunch, and soon no such thing as a free ride in downtown Portland's Fairless Square. TriMet plans to drop free bus service in the city's main shopping area. Here's how they plan to sell it to the public. The change to the square would simplify the system and save money as agency revenues drop. Free rides would continue on the streetcar and light rail, including two lines that begin running north-south through the bus mall by September.
Is it possible that the same people who want the schools to pay for special education and enhanced learning opportunities for their little Einsteins are also the same people who sign on to the anti-tax bandwagon? Well, now we are at an impasse. Yesterday, the legislature's school funding plan first got hung up in the Senate and later in the House. Tuesday, Ted Kulongoski vetoed the measure, and now legislative Democrats seem to be having trouble mustering enough votes to issue an override, placing their K-12 budget in legislative limbo for the time being.
In Seattle last Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Richard Jones ruled that the Forest Stewardship Council, United States, Conservation Northwest, and the Center for Biological Diversity failed to show that they were damaged by the decisions of the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, Commerce Department, and U.S. Customs and Border Protection. The judge ruled that conservation groups lacked standing to challenge the federal government's decision to give $350 million from a U.S.-Canada softwood lumber settlement to forestry foundations. At issue are claims that the payments illegally bypassed the Treasury Department and Congress.
Moral of the story, anytime you're getting sued by anyone, all you'd have to do is convince the judge that that the case of the opposition lacks standing and you're home free, basically. Well, if you're trying to understand all of the reasons why your representatives may support or oppose certain healthcare reform measures, opensecrets.org has got the goods. The website offers a handy chart showing how much money each current lawmaker has raised from various health-related industries and the health sector overall since 1989. President Barack Obama tops the list of recipients of health care munificence. Minority Leader John Boehner has collected more money from health insurers than all of the current members of Congress. And now, the envelope, please, Liam. Thank you. Let's see what it says about our own Senator Ron Wyden. Yes, here's the number. In total, from the health insurance and healthcare industry, Senator Ron Wyden has received $1,357,213.
Way to go, Ron. Yesterday, a retired health insurance executive admitted that insurance companies deliberately confuse policyholders and attempt to dump sick patients to plump their profit margins. Former Cigna senior executive Wendell Potter said insurers, quote, confuse their customers and dump the sick, all so they can satisfy their Wall Street investors, unquote. Potter was speaking to senators at a hearing on health insurance before the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation.
And one final story from Liam.
Yeah, finally, in Australia, wallabies are getting high on opium and flattening crops as they hop around in circles. The marsupials have been getting into medical opium crops in the southern island of Tasmania and chewing on the plants' heads. Tasmania is the world's largest producer of legally grown opium for the pharmaceutical market, with about 500 farms supplying approximately 50% of the raw material for morphine and other opiates.
Another example of do-it-yourself health care.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, June 25th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Emily Young. The interim KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints. Remembering the life of Haitian human rights leader and liberation theologist Father Jerry, and Helen Caldicott speaks about the nuclear threat.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.